Ranger.
The most trusted and longest running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and we look forward to here in a minute or two catching up with former NFL fullback, also proud member of the Fighting Illini of Illinois, Howard Griffith, as he breaks down games for the Big Ten Network. It's going to be a pleasure to catch up with him. But we also want to highlight, Jimmy, that this time next week, I guess we will be starting the pick segment. Is that right? Our first?
Yes, and the legend known as Al Brown will be our guest picker. He usually leads it off, so we'll have him join us again for that. And so we'll have the pick segment at the 4 o'clock hour on Friday. We will have the pigskin panel with Will Overstreet, John Pennington, in the 5 o'clock hour. So we look forward to that.
Yeah, and then it'll be leading into the first game week for the first game for the University of Tennessee, which is set for a 7:30 kickoff at South Carolina as the Volunteers start this unheard-of 10-game SEC, all-SEC schedule. And, of course, that's the same for every team in the conference. It'll be interesting to see exactly what the rosters look like when we get to game time, won't it?
Yes, it will be, and there's just no telling right now. I mean, we're sitting here finding out on a Friday that Houston and Baylor can't play because Baylor doesn't have enough players, and we just found out earlier this week that Charlotte cannot play because they don't have enough ready, so they can't play against North Carolina, which had been scheduled. So you just don't know from week to week, and it's unfortunate. I think that's what we're going to face. I think we should just try to appreciate whatever games we do get to watch. Even if they might not on paper be the most appealing, but heck, there were a lot of games last week that on paper didn't look appealing, and Louisiana Lafayette won, and and Arkansas State won, and Coastal Carolina won. I just think we should be thankful for what we can get, and I just wouldn't, you know, I'm just worried about how many games are going to be postponed. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen in the SEC. I don't think there's any doubt about it. I just hope it's going to be on a limited capacity.
Yeah, and they have left some wiggle room in case you do have situations that I think are going to be, it's not a matter of if, but when. And and as we've seen the Big Ten target its restart date, or I should say start date, the Pac-12 is getting closer and closer. It was something to see, Jimmy, that L.A. County Health Department says it will not further restrict either Southern Cal or UCLA beyond what's mandated by the state. So the Pac-12 is also going to be eyeing the end of October to perhaps start their football season.
I hope they're able to get it going. I do think they're almost like the Big Ten is the owner, and then the Pac-12's little dog coming right behind them. Whatever you do, that's what we're going to do. But I do hope they're able to get it going. I'm glad that they're at least taking the time to research it and look to see if they're able to go forward. Hey, if they're not, okay, they're not. I thought the wildfires might also have an impact on it because of the air quality, all the houses being burned and all that. But if they're able to play, good for them. I hope that is the way it works out.
Yes, so we'll see whether or not we get anything going in regards to other conferences. There are still some that are holding out in regards to perhaps, I think it's the Mountain West that's still talking about the spring, isn't it?
That's right. The Mountain West, however, they did acknowledge that the presidents are supposed to meet on Saturday about the potential for playing in the fall with perhaps a 6-8 game schedule. So at least they're looking at it. You know, we'll see if they do get going. I don't know if they will. I just know that at least they're now considering it. And I think when you look back on it, and I took issue with some people that were ripping the SEC about this a while back, but I thought the SEC played it about right. They didn't make a hurry-up decision. They also decided to go basically about a month into the college restart. So whenever colleges return, it's about a month, and that gave you time to assess and try to get through the situation of students returning and then more positives popping up. So I think that was a good move by the SEC. I think they played it probably better, as well or better than any other conference out there.
It's an absolute pleasure as we head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline to say hello to Howard Griffith, proud former Fighting Illini for the University of Illinois. He played with four franchises in the National Football League, and while he wore number 29 for the Denver Broncos, he was number one in the heart of Terrell Davis as he paved the way for a 1,700-yard and 2,000-yard season as he helped the Broncos win back-to-back Super Bowl championships. He joins us now. Howard, how are you?
I am doing well, fellas. How about you guys on this wonderful Friday afternoon?
Oh, it's another day closer to game day, so it's a great day. We sure do appreciate
exactly.
your time.
All right, no problem.
Well, first, if you don't mind, the fanboy in me has to know, what was it like to just be a part of everything that was with the creation of, the implementation of, and just the incredible success of the Mile High Salute?
It was a lot of fun. I mean, obviously, you know, you set out to, you know, ultimately win, you know, world championships when you play this game or win championships. And, you know, I was fortunate to be a part of a team that was able to win back-to-back championships. So it's something that I truly cherish.
How different was it going from the ultimate underdog in Super Bowl 32 to the expectation that went with the year that led to the second title, and that was the prohibitive favorite, Super Bowl 33?
Well, I think they don't even compare. I think the second time around, you hoist the trophy, you immediately, you know, look around the locker room and you see that you're going to have the same guys are still under contract, and maybe you can add one or two more pieces, but you know you want to go out and repeat, because that's the most difficult thing to do. It's a lot easier to win the first one than it is the second one, because everyone's giving you their best shot. And I usually tell the story like this. After the first Super Bowl win, guys couldn't wait to get back into their suits so they could get in front of the cameras, go back to the hotel and party. After the second one, guys literally just walked out of the locker room with shorts on, a torn T-shirt or whatever they had, because we were absolutely exhausted from trying to accomplish a goal that we set out to. And once we had done that, it was really just a sigh of relief.
You had the great screen pass that was a catch that was so pivotal in Super Bowl 32. You got to score a touchdown in Super Bowl 33. One moment better than the other for you, or just both? Hey, just glad to be a part.
Yeah, both of them were great moments, but I tell this story as well. In the first Super Bowl, John Elway, we're running a bootleg, and I'm wide open. I know I'm going to get the ball, and I'm just saying, throw the football. And John just decides to run it in, which was the right move to make. He points at the linebacker, and I go block him. Then he looks me in the eye like a great leader would say. He say, "Hey, bud, I didn't trust myself throwing it to you, so I just ran it in." And I'm like, "Yeah, you just didn't trust me. You just wanted to make sure you got the touchdown."
Howard, so the Big Ten looks like they're going to get going again. Just talk about this whole process about the Big Ten hoping to resume action the weekend of October 24.
Yeah, listen, everyone knows that, what happened as far as the Big Ten is concerned. And then it really came down to a lot of the medical evidence that was laid out going back 40-plus days. And fortunate for the competitors, not just football, but all fall sports, the medical evidence continued to change, and Big Ten was able to get a hold of more testing. And, you know, now they have an opportunity to go out and compete. It's going to be a couple of weeks that these teams have to get ready to go out and perform, but they're going to be testing on a daily basis. I think contact tracing, or if you contract COVID, you're going to be out 21 days as opposed to the 14 days. There's going to be extensive heart monitoring that's going to be going on. So I think a lot of the things that were questioned before, we have more evidence of it and more information in a much better, and I think a robust testing protocol that's going to allow our teams to go out and compete. Because one of the things that I think was probably, and still is, contact tracing doesn't really work. One, we can't afford, most teams can't afford to do it. Two, you don't know. And we've seen it throughout, you know, college athletics. You have to be able to test the same day, everyone that same day, and be able to get test results back immediately so that you know that everybody that's going into a venue or going to be playing in a particular practice or game is going to have tested negative for COVID. So, you know, it's been a long process. Obviously, the Big Ten has taken a lot of heat with it. But at the end of the day, you know, hey, they're going to try to go out and play some games next month, and I'm looking forward to it.
Did you think the Big Ten acted too quickly August 11th?
You know, it's hard for me to say that, and the reason I say that is I wasn't in the room and wasn't privy to the medical information that was given. Now, there have been some presidents and chancellors have come out and said there was just absolutely no way that they were going to risk the health of student-athletes, and they didn't feel like it was enough information that they had that they could be able to keep them safe. Now, in saying that, the schedule was set up as, okay, if you can push it back and you can wait and you can wait. But from my perspective, and I guess the perspective of a lot of the administrators, that the evidence that was laid out was just overwhelming. And that's really the only thing we can go with. I am excited that, you know, there was a reversal, because if you go back maybe three weeks ago, there was no chance this was going to be revisited at all. And I think that statement of not revisiting it is going to allow moving forward some of the players who have opted out for the National Football League to be able to come back and be able to compete with their teams, even though they may have signed with agents.
Now, that leads me to this question. Because of these unique circumstances, do you think that even if a player signed with an agent, that he should be able to make restitution and have immediate eligibility?
Yeah, I think they're going to be granted immediate eligibility. The question is, right, if they've taken benefits, if they've taken cash. Now, again, I say because the words or the phrase, we are not going to revisit this vote, would have sent a potential first-round draft pick out into the real world, signed with an agent, and whether that was if he started prepping for combine training or working out with at a certain facility, you know, there would have been some benefits that most likely would have passed hands. But as you just mentioned, this is a very unique situation, and I think that if restitution is paid, as you mentioned, I think they will be able to be granted their immediate eligibility. And listen, we're in a crazy time right now. And I think if you have an opportunity for a young person to come back and compete and continue their academic endeavors, that they should be given every opportunity to be able to do that.
Our guest is Howard Griffith of the Big Ten Network as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Howard, what do you think the next five or so weeks are going to be like for these Big Ten football players that now know there's a target date and the chance that they're working towards something as opposed to kind of just practicing?
Well, here's the challenge, right? I think the institutions and teams that were able to keep their players engaged, because let's look at it this way. If you're a young person and you're just having your season taken away, and you're still being asked to follow protocol and do some of these things, and knowing at that particular point that, you know, we're not playing this year. We might play in the spring. You may tend to drift off and do some other things. So that's why I think that the teams that have the best strength and conditioning programs, the best motivators in those programs, not necessarily the head coach, but the strength and conditioning coach and his or her staff that are able to stay engaged with the young people and keep them involved, I think will be able to have the most and the best success as they start to transition toward football. They had a chance to go out and immediately start practicing, I think, 2 days ago, and we're going to be able to find out. But, you know, there's going to be some questions. There are going to be some soft tissue injuries that are going to happen, and that's why I go back to strength and conditioning programs that are best set up, that know what they're doing, are going to have a great deal of success, I believe, as they start to transition toward football.
My guess is that in your role as an analyst, you've been asked a lot about several things that Jim Harbaugh has said over the years, but I'm just wondering, is there a better phrase for 2020 than stay positive, test negative?
Yeah, you know, listen, most people either love or hate Jim, because he'll come up with some things. But one of the things that I've always had a great deal of respect for, he always fights for his team. He's done some great things, and I know people have really ridiculed him and talked about him about taking his team, you know, out of the country or exposing them to some different things and calling it spring practice.
Yeah,
but I really appreciated that part of it, because, you know, somebody's played in the National Football League. there's still nothing like being with your teammates in college when you take some of those trips, whether it's a bowl trip, whether it's a special game that you guys are going to play. Just bonding with your teammates and being able to travel like that is one of the things that's always stuck out to me, even when I look back now at my playing career collegiately and professionally. It was the traveling and the bonding. So, hey, he's got that part of it figured out, but he's got his hands full. He's got to try to win some games, obviously. A lot of pressure has been on him lately, but nobody puts more pressure on themselves than Jim Harbaugh trying to make sure he can get this Michigan program back to where it wants to be. But Ohio State and Penn State kind of keep standing in the way.
So which team is the biggest challenge to Ohio State? Is it Michigan? Is it Penn State? Or is it somebody else?
You know, that's a difficult question. Usually I have an opportunity to see all these teams in the spring, and then again I see them in the summer on our bus tour. And not being able to do that has kind of put me a little bit behind. But I would have to say it's still Penn State, a very talented football team. If I had to look at a couple teams that are in the East, I think Penn State right now is a little bit better situated from a talent standpoint than Michigan is right now. If I looked at a team that was over in the West, I'd probably say Minnesota has an opportunity to continue to build on what they did last year, had an incredible year. And Wisconsin, the Badgers, and all of these teams that I've mentioned are returning quarterbacks. But when you look at the roster that Ohio State has, I mean, that's a championship roster that they have. And now they're going to be gaining the addition of two gentlemen or two players who opted out, arguably one of the top corners in this upcoming draft and one of the best offensive linemen in this upcoming draft. And those two guys are really going to help their program continue to fight for a championship this year.
All right, I got to ask you this question. Now, let's take out your prejudices of maybe like in Illinois or the Denver Broncos. When you watch a college or a pro game, do you pull for the teams that have a fullback?
Kind of hard to do. Although last night, I believe Cleveland was playing with a fullback a little bit. So that made me a little happy. But listen, there are not many around anymore. Even at the college level, you don't get a chance to see them. But it's really been the evolution of football. This has really turned into a play game in space type of offenses that are out there. So they want to get the ball in the quarterback's hand, the quarterback get the ball to favorable matchups, and that's what really happens. It's about really forcing defensive players. It's so hard to play defense at the college and pro level right now, because most of the time these guys are really conflicted in what their eyes see and what their studies have been teaching them to do as they get prepared for the week. When you run these decide option plays, run pass options, there are so many options that the quarterbacks have. So when you face one that truly is special, that is a true dual threat that can run the ball or he can drop back and pick you apart, it makes it very difficult to try to slow those guys down. Having a fullback made it a little bit easy, but that's not where the game is right now.
Howard, what has it been like to see your son Houston go to Notre Dame, and how crazy is it to see Notre Dame competing in the ACC this season?
Yeah, there are a lot of crazy things that have gone on this year, and I don't think anybody would have ever thought that you would see Notre Dame competing in the ACC or in a conference. Forget just the ACC, just playing conference football. This year, obviously, that's what's taking place. And, you know, it's been exciting. You know, it's been exciting. It's a team they've got, you know, an opportunity, I think, to play South Florida this week. And, you know, this is a team that's pretty talented. But like most teams that are out there, you know, they're not only competing against the competitors that they have on the schedule, but COVID is also going to be an issue. I think Baylor and Houston's game has just been postponed within the last hour or so. So, you know, there's so many crazy things that are going on. It's been difficult for, you know, I think all coaches and athletes that are trying to compete and want to compete. If you're talking about Big Ten athletes who've had that taken away from them, now they're going to have that opportunity to go out there and compete, but they still have to continue to be vigilant and follow the protocols that their schools and institutions have put in place so that they hopefully can stay safe and can go out and be able to compete at a high level.
Howard, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us, and would really love to have you back on with us in the future to talk more Big Ten football.
Hey, anytime, guys, and enjoy this weekend of football. It's almost like we've got to make sure we take in each and every week because we don't know what the next week is going to hold for us. So enjoy, stay safe, guys, and enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you. Thank you. Said to you as well. Howard Griffith of the Big Ten Network joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break and be back with more as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
The Sports Animal and Alexa are best friends. Just tell her, Alexa, enable the 99.1 The Sports Animal skill.
Skill enabled.
Then anytime you want immediate Tennessee sports info, say, Alexa, play 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Okay, playing 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. And, Jimmy, we had at least one listener that was looking for further clarification as they heard the conversation that we had with Jesse Smithy about Hall's situation, and that is Hall's High School. It was announced by Knox County Schools specifically for Hall's. So as they are going to be virtually learning for the next couple of weeks, it is not something that impacts all Knox County Schools, simply Hall's High School.
Right, and that's over, what, a two-week period? I think they're going to be out through the first week of October. So their game so they won't be playing for a while. Tough news for Halls, but, yeah, that if you're not going to school, you're not going to be able to play under TSSAA rules. So tough break for Halls.
Yeah, but, again, somebody didn't hear all of the conversation, was wondering if that was all schools. Nope, yeah. Just Halls High School. And we wish that community the very best in just getting past that. And there's no I mean, as you were talking about, as Howard, our guest, mentioned, Jimmy, this is something that can crop up at any time, anywhere, because, again, we're still looking for that thing that can just simply knock this stuff out.
Yeah, and it may be a while before we have that, unfortunately. But it is a tough situation for, gosh, pretty much everybody. You know, that you hate it for the people that get COVID, you hate it for the schools, you hate it for the economy, you hate it for it's just there's nothing good about this thing hardly. So and sad to hear what happened at Halls. There's been a lot of programs that have been affected, and I just don't know. This is a guess on my part, maybe I shouldn't be guessing, but I just think we're going to continue to have, on the college level and high school level, games postponed. I just think it's going to continue to happen, and we just do the best we can to fight through this.
Yeah, and that's why you have seen the approaches that have been put in place to where there is indeed wiggle room, whether it be the extra week before you get to the championship game in the conference for the SEC, as well as other setups by other leagues. And I think the NFL obviously has taken some steps along the way to where some of the scheduling blocks that they've put together, just in case everything has to stop down, they can be picked up a little bit further down the road. And they have leeway between what is the scheduled end of their regular season and playoffs, and even have the opportunity to push the Super Bowl back 2 or 3 weeks, which I was not aware of until so much of the conversation that's gone on this year, that they actually have that written into the agreements, that you have to leave these slides, if need be, for the Super Bowl. That if you you scheduled for the first week in February, but you also have to make sure the venue is available through the end of that month as well.
Yeah, so it you know, it's just a tough ordeal. Tough deal that we're fighting through. I do want to mention one note before we move on to play some interviews. Andy Katz has reported that there's not one league that he's talked to that doesn't want to play non-conference basketball games and then, for the most part, start conference play in January. I think that's a good thing. I think that, so we get basketball started around November 25th. I look forward to that. Certainly look forward to seeing what Tennessee puts out on the court. I meant to mention this earlier, and I think it was Blue Ribbon. They've got Tennessee number 5 in their preseason poll. How about that?
Yeah.
That's strong. Yeah.
Very much so. We'll get a break, and when we return, we'll bring you some of that sound Jimmy's talking about. Sports Talk rolls on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Hey, this is VFL Joshua Dobbs, and we're counting it down. It's just
8 days until
it's football time in Tennessee.
This Sports Radio WNML Countdown to Kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com. Go on!
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. Earlier this week, we saw the season debut of Vol Calls. Among the guests, Tennessee Athletics Director Philip Fulmer. Here is that conversation.
Coach, I know you're proud of your athletes, your student athletes, for getting us to this point, but you're also very proud of your staff for being able to solve some problems, take in the information, and get this program to where it is right now, getting ready to play football.
Yeah, Bob, you're exactly right. There's so many people that have had their hands in this. The conference has done a fantastic job of staying the course and pausing when they have to and moving forward when they can and, you know, changing when they needed to with the processes that are in place. And you mentioned our staff. I mean, it's been incredible what Dr. Chris Klink has done and Jason McVay with the sports medicine group there. Everybody in the training room led by Geronimo, they're just fantastic. And our entire staff. So we've effectively demonstrated that we can manage a bubble, so to speak, and do the protocols that we need to do to keep our young men and women safe as we go through this fall and probably next spring dealing with COVID. Our athletic staff has done a great job, but also our facilities people have just done a super job of sanitizing and keeping our guys in a clean space.
You know, it's amazing, too. The information changes on a daily basis, sometimes hour to hour, and you got to be flexible and change with that, don't you?
Bob, yeah, it does. And that can be frustrating, and particularly frustrating to a coach that's trying to build a team, whether it be soccer or volleyball, football. You know, you have so many people that have to work together to make a play successful or a defense successful. And when you don't have all your guys out there, it's really, really hard. And I think we're on the tail end of all of that with losing so many kids at one particular time. But, you know, you never know. And that's why the conference built in a couple open dates during the course of the season to have a chance to make up games if we have to.
Coach, it's Brad. First of all, condolences on the loss of a great VFL and Bill Johnson. I know one of your good friends and a guy who meant so much to the state and to the University of Tennessee as well. I do want to ask you about just your student athletes and kind of their resiliency in all of this and following those protocols. I mean, we see all these stories about, you know, the maybe not doing that age group not doing everything they should do, but it appears that your student athletes, for the most part, have certainly followed every instruction that has been provided to them from the chancellor all the way through the medical team.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning Bill. Bill Johnson, just a great ball and All-American guard here and wonderful, beautiful family. It's a tough loss for our volunteer family, the super guy. But, yeah, we have done well, I think, at least the 4 hours of the day that we have them, typically, in all of our sports, whether it be working out, we've kept our social distancing, we wear our mask, coaches do a great job of spreading out for meetings and those things, and dining. We don't have a lot of in-class classes, but when we do have them, I see our athletes with the mask pulled up going to class and in class, and they call on each other. They hold each other accountable, so that's been good. Now, the problem is when they're not with you, and kids will be kids, and they'll want to play a video game, and they'll get competitive, and the next thing you know, they're sitting too close, or maybe not one of them won't have the mask up, then if they're around somebody that's positive, and then the contact tracers, talk to them, and they tell them the truth. Yeah, well, I was around him, and I didn't have my mask on, so now you're out too. So, and that's been a really disruptive part of this fall preseason camp.
The campus, Neyland Stadium, is going to look different on October the 3rd against Missouri. Can you kind of preview a little bit for the fans what they need to anticipate when they come to Neyland Stadium?
Well, yeah, Bob. I mean, we're working really to create the safest possible environment that we possibly can. We obviously need our fans to do their part, stay masked up, and you know, it's really important when you're keeping your physical distancing when you're in the stands or in the concourse and those kinds of things. If you've come in with a group, you know, family members, you know, you're allowed to sit together, but, you know, let's don't move around during the game and congregate in places that we're not supposed to be, because we'll have the health department after them and us. So we just need to be doing a good job with all that. We expectations about how they enter and exit and all those things. I would encourage people to, you know, look at utsports.com and game day, and just to familiarize themselves what's going on campus there as to some of the protocols that we have in place.
There'll be plenty of signage. There'll be places to sanitize your hands. So there'll be a lot of precautions there. So, and you're very confident that Neyland Stadium is going to be clean and healthy and a safe place to be.
I am confident of that. And we've looked at everything from parking and how we enter and how we exit, and our people have really worked hard at it. And now everybody just got to go do their thing, and we'll enjoy a game. And you know what the hope is, if we can get this curve turned, some of the virus, and maybe as we go along during the season, we can possibly have more people get to come to the game.
Yeah, that'd be great. Speaking of games, everybody's talking about football getting that started, but there's some other sports on campus. They're getting started this weekend.
Yeah, soccer gets teased it off this weekend against Alabama. They go to Alabama, and, you know, it should be a great match. And our girls are prepared, you know, very well. Volleyball starts here in a couple weeks, and they've worked hard to get themselves ready, and they'll continue. Both sports will continue into the spring, obviously.
Well, it has been a journey since March to get us to this point, but, Coach, you've navigated the waters, and you've got us this close, and now it's just a matter of staying the course and getting to that starting line against South Carolina on the 26th.
Well, thank you, Bob, but it's been this 100%. It's been a full effort by everybody. Our administration has been unbelievable. Dante Plowman has gone to see different sports and all the sports, actually, the fall sports and the band and other people. She's been on campus trying to get students to get their mask up and not gather, and it's just been a great leader. And I mentioned the conference office earlier in the interview here. They've just been fantastic, and we've got a week to go, and hopefully we can get our best players out there and start the season off and pick up on the momentum that we had, you know, when ending the season last year.
And so comments from Tennessee Athletics Director Philip Fulmer.
Yeah, and it has been a team effort by Tennessee, by the SEC. It's been a tough go of it. It's been a great challenge, and hopefully things will work out. We had the question earlier from Roger about how many Tennessee players will be out. We have no idea. But if they can get through this and get to the first game, and if the only players that are missing are the ones that are injured, my goodness, what a great job they've done in that regard. So we'll see. But it's been a tough go of it for a lot of people.
That's Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break and be back with a final segment to hour number two of Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Because we have a transmitter and you don't. 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Himes. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900.
John, it looks like with the U.S. Open, that cut line continues to move. It may go to +6 because there are a whole bunch of people that are struggling today. Patrick Reed is having one of the most ridiculous rounds I've ever seen. He can't hit a fairway. He doesn't hit many greens, but his scrambling has been incredible today. So even though he's played poorly tee to green, He is even par today at 4 under. That's the leader right now. But, boy, when you look at this list, there are 44. There's a 44 in ties at plus 5. So all you got to do is have a couple of those that move up to that plus 6, and you're going to have all these plus 6s in there, and that would be about 10 or 12 more. So Wingfoot showing its teeth today, without a doubt, and we'll see how things go over the next 2 days, where I think it will not get any easier. So here was a note that I thought was interesting with the Titans. I'm not familiar with this person. There's a quarterback named Kyle Sloter that is going to work out for the Titans later this, well, soon. It didn't say exactly what day. So they're looking at bringing in another quarterback to take a look at. We'll see how that works out. Also, at Bristol Motor Speedway with the Truck Series, Sam Mayer wins it. Well, what's interesting about that is that Mayer's 17 years old.
Wow.
And he won that race. And last year, he won 2 events at Bristol. I'm not sure what those races were, but my goodness, that guy must really like Bristol Motor Speedway. He's pretty good in that Coliseum. Also, Tennessee men's tennis schedule is out. They're going to have 3 fall tournaments, and these are SEC-only tournaments. So the first one is going to be at South Carolina, October the 2nd through the 4th. Then they go to Mississippi State, October 23 to 25. Then they host the Tennessee Invitational, November 6th through the 8th. So that's a look at the men's tennis schedule of Chris Woodruff. So they're going to get in 3 fall tournaments, and I'm sure they're excited about that. They return. Their number one player returning is Adam Walton. He was 26-5 last year, and he had a ranking as high as 13 in the ITA. And then they bring in 5 newcomers. So it should be a really strong and a deep class for Coach Woodruff. And the MAAC has revealed its schedule. They will not start having they will have non-conference games starting November the 25th. And they're looking at conference games starting in early December with their conference tournament March 9 through the 13th. So at least we're seeing some basketball teams move in that direction. And I'll be curious. I know the Tennessee is trying to figure out what they're going to do. We did mention yesterday that it seemed unlikely that Tennessee would play Wisconsin this year. I just don't think it's going to be easy to find a slot in the schedule to do that. So I think there's a better chance that Tennessee will end up playing Wisconsin next year, that they would try to schedule that in for next year, which gives them plenty of time to do that. And it should be a really good game, I would think. Tennessee got hit pretty good by Wisconsin last year when they played in Knoxville. But I think it'll be a really good basketball game. So we look forward to seeing what happens with that. But these basketball schedules, I think over the next few days, we'll see conferences and we'll see teams continue to come out with some of their scheduling.
Yeah, and here's hoping that everything gets to move in an orderly fashion towards the targeted date, which the NCAA, as you mentioned, set earlier this week for both men and women on November 25th. And I do wonder how many of these preseason tournaments that we will get a chance to see. You were talking about the Maui Invitational being held in Asheville, North Carolina. Just think. You've been waiting and waiting and waiting for that opportunity to perhaps make your first trip ever to the incredible state that is Hawaii. And lo and behold, Now, I'll say this. You never have to apologize for visiting the Smoky Mountains.
No, you don't.
you are blessed to get that opportunity if you've never been there. But it's going to be such a different turn to have been wetting your whistle or just been wetting your appetite for Maui. And now you know. I mean, you get to play. But Asheville, North Carolina, you can go. They should have some sort of big event at the Biltmore.
Yeah, last December when I had a couple of days, my wife and I went to the Biltmore. It's the first time I'd ever seen the Biltmore at Christmas time. We also went to the Grove Park. Did I get that right?
Yes.
And we went to the Biltmore, spent the night, went to Grove Park the next day, just hung out, just beautiful. So it's a lovely city. It really is. So I think some folks will they'll enjoy that. But I'm glad to see that they're able to apparently get it up and going.
Yes.
As far as the blue ribbon, Michigan State's number 1, Kentucky 2, Kansas 3, Duke is 4. Wait a minute. This is not right. I just called this up. Oh, you know what? I should have been more careful. I called up Blue Ribbon Releases preseason top 25, and guess what?
You got last year's?
Yes. I love it when that happens. It's the first one that, I mean, it, you would think that would be it, right? First one that pops up, but it was from last year. So scratch that. We will move on. I'm going to take a mulligan on that one.
All right. Well, we'll visit that later. We've got a lot more coming your way with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. The second half of Sports Talk is right around the corner, and we look forward to bringing you comments from the likes of Tennessee coach Jeremy Pruitt. We'll also have a Tennessee football practice report with Eric Kane. That'll be closer to the end of the show, and then we will also have Hamer Time with VFL and all-around great guy Steve Hamer. We have all that and more coming your way on Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.